My uncle was most graciously received by M. Finson, the mayor, who, as far as costume went, was quite as military as the governor, but also from character and occupation quite as pacific. As for his coadjutor, M. Pitcherson, he was absent on an episcopal visit to the northern portion of the diocese. We were, therefore, compelled to defer the pleasure of being presented to him. His absence was, however, more than compensated by the presence of M. Fredrickson, professor of natural science in the College of Reykjavik, a man of invaluable ability. This modest scholar spoke no languages save Icelandic and Latin. When, therefore, he addressed himself to me in the language of Horace, we at once came to understand one another. He was, in fact, the only person that I did thoroughly understand during the whole period of my residence in this benighted island. Out of three rooms of which his house was composed, two were placed at our service, and in a few hours we were installed with our baggage, the amount of which rather astonished the simple inhabitants of Reykjavik. That evening I took a walk on the shore near Reykjavik, after which I returned to an early sleep on my bed of coarse planks, where I slept the sleep of the just. When I awoke, I heard my uncle speaking loudly in the next room. I rose hastily and joined him. He was talking in Danish with a man of tall stature and of perfectly Herculean build. This man appeared to be possessed of very great strength. His eyes, which stared rather prominently from a very large head, the face belonging to which was simple and naive, appeared very quick and intelligent. Very long hair, which even in England would have been accounted exceedingly red, fell over his athletic shoulders. Everything in this man's manner revealed a calm and phlegmatic temperament. There was nothing indolent about him, but his appearance spoke of tranquility. I began to comprehend his character, simply from the way in which he listened to the wild and impassioned verbiage of my worthy uncle. While the excellent professor spoke sentence after sentence, he stood with folded arms, utterly still, motionless to all my uncle's gesticulations. When he wanted to say no, he moved his head from left to right. When he acquiesced, he nodded, so slightly that you could scarcely see the undulation of his head. This economy of motion was carried to the length of avarice. Judging from his appearance, it should have been a long time before I had suspected him to be what he was, a mighty hunter. Certainly his manner was not likely to frighten the game. How, then, did he contrive to get at his prey? My surprise was slightly modified when I knew that this tranquil and solemn personage was only a hunter of the eider duck, the down of which is, after all, the greatest source of the Icelander's wealth. This grave, sententious, silent person, as phlegmatic as an Englishman on the French stage, was named Hans Bjelke. He had called upon us in consequence of the recommendation of M. Fredrickson. He was, in fact, our future guide. It struck me that had I sought the world over, I could not have found a greater contradiction to my impulsive uncle. They, however, readily understood one another. Neither of them had any thought about money. One was ready to take all that was offered him, the other ready to offer anything that was asked. It may readily be conceived, then, that an understanding was soon to come between them. Now, the understanding was that he was to take us to the village of Stapi, situated on the southern slope of the peninsula of Sneffels, at the very foot of the volcano. Hans, the guide, told us the distance was about 22 miles, a journey which my uncle supposed would take about 2 days. But when my uncle came to understand that they were Danish miles of 8,000 yards each, he was obliged to be more moderate in his ideas, and considering the horrible roads we had to follow, to allow 8 or 10 days for the journey. 4 horses were prepared for us, 2 to carry the baggage, and 2 to bear the important weight of myself and uncle. Hans declared that nothing ever would make him climb on the back of any animal. He knew every inch of that part of the coast, and promised to take us the very shortest way. His engagement with my uncle was by no means to cease with our arrival at Stapi. He was further to remain in his service during the whole time required for the completion of his scientific investigations at the fixed salary of 3 rix dollars a week, being exactly 14 shillings and 2 pence, minus 1 farthing, English currency. One stipulation, however, was made by the guide. The money was to be paid to him every Saturday night, failing which his engagement was at an end. The day of our departure was fixed. My uncle wished to hand the eiderdown hunter an advance, but he refused in one emphatic word, "efter," which being translated from Icelandic into plain English means "after." The treaty concluded, our worthy guide retired without another word. "A splendid fellow," said my uncle. "Only he little suspects the marvelous part he is about to play in the history of the world." "You mean, then," I cried in amazement, "that he should accompany us?" "To the interior of the earth, yes," replied my uncle. "Why not?" There were yet 48 hours to elapse before we made our final start. To my great regret, the whole time was taken up in making preparations for our journey. All our industry and ability were devoted to packing every object in the most advantageous manner, the instruments on one side, the arms on the other, the tools here and the provisions there. It took a whole day to put all these matters in order. In the evening we dined with Baron Tramp, in company with the mayor of Reykjavik and Dr. Hjaltalin, the great medical man of Iceland. The next day, our labor came to an end. Our worthy host delighted my uncle, Professor Hardwig, by giving him a good map of Iceland, a most important and precious document for a mineralogist. Our last evening was spent in a long conversation with M. Fredriksen, whom I liked very much, the more that I never expected to see him or anyone else again. After this agreeable way of spending an hour or so, I tried to sleep. In vain. With the exception of a few dozes, my night was miserable. At 5 in the morning, I was awakened from the only real half-hour's sleep of the night by the loud neighing of horses under my window. I hastily dressed myself and went down into the street. Hans was engaged in putting the finishing stroke to our baggage, which he did in a silent, quiet way that won my admiration, and yet he did it admirably well. My uncle wasted a great deal of breath in giving him directions, but worthy Hans took not the slightest notice of his words. At 6 o'clock, all our preparations were completed, and M. Fredriksen shook hands heartily with us. My uncle thanked him warmly in the Icelandic language for his kind hospitality, speaking truly from the heart. As for myself, I put together a few of my best Latin phrases and paid him the highest compliments I could. This fraternal and friendly duty performed, we sallied forth and mounted our horses. As soon as we were quite ready, M. Fredriksen advanced and, by way of farewell, called after me in the words of Virgil, words which appeared to have been made for us, travelers starting for an uncertain destination. Et quisinque viam dederit fortuna sequimur. And whichsoever way thou goest, may fortune follow.